Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to... Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to American Sports History. I'm your host, Peter J. Ray. Mark Mancini is our producer. And tonight we have another guest, the same guest for the 16th time. Just wonderful. A former NBA player from 1980 to 1995 with the Seattle Supersonics, San Diego Clippers, LA Clippers, Dallas Mavericks, New York Knicks, and Utah Jazz. He's the author of two books, Standing Above the Crowd, and Celebrating Your Gift of Life from the Verge of Suicide to a Life of Purpose and Joy. Welcome to the show, Mr. James Donaldson.
Hey there, Peter Ray. Good afternoon to you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. And Mr. Donaldson has a podcast every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. on the Mark Pacific Time on the Mark Mancini Network. Standing Above the Crowd, last 2 weeks, John Lovick and Craig Elo. You want to talk about those two shows?
Well, sure. Even though, you know, I'm hosting a sports talk radio podcast, John Lovick is actually a senator in the state of Washington here, one of the political folks, and he was responsible for getting the bill passed, the legislature passed, to make pickleball the official sport of the state of Washington since it was founded right here in the state. And he made that bill happen. And so now he's an avid enthusiast. I think you can hear it in his voice when he talks about pickleball, how great a sport it is. More and more people are getting into it. It's a wonderful pastime. So much easier on the baby boomer set that so many of us are now, that can no longer, you know, play basketball or tennis or, you know, run up and down the field. Pickleball is really a great sport to play. So I really enjoyed the conversation with him, and I didn't know much about pickleball until I spoke to John about it, but found out so much more, and I'm anxious to get out there myself this summer and start playing some pickleball. The next guest was Craig Elo last Saturday morning. And Craig was, of course, a key member of the great Cleveland Cavaliers teams back in the 90s, where they just couldn't get by the Michael Jordan-led Chicago Bulls. Craig was telling, in such crystal clarity, the play that's known as the shot heard around the world, part two, I call it, where Michael took the ball with 4 seconds left, and just kind of broke loose from Craig for just a millisecond and went up and launched that game-winning jumper. But the way Craig tells it, he's a basketball analyst himself. The way he tells it, he really brings it to life. And it was just a great interview with him. And his years in the NBA, playing against all those great players, and then his life after the game, of course. Now he's been doing some coaching, some color commentating, college basketball analyst, and all those kind of things. So, you know, we keep having great guests one after another. I'm just pleased and honored to be able to host it and continue bringing the good conversations to the folks who listen in. So thank you so much, Mark, for letting me, or Peter, for letting me add that little bit into our conversation today.
Oh, well, I'm loving your show and learning about pickleball. I haven't played yet, I got to play. And of course, Craig Elo, he's such an important part of Cleveland sports history, and I loved hearing his, and such a good fella, you know, such a good man and very articulate, and I loved hearing his thoughts. Ron from Macon, Georgia. Hey, fellas, glad you're on, watching my Atlanta Hawks. Where is Lou Hudson when you need him? Love Craig Elo. Love Craig Elo when he was here in Atlanta.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Craig was always a consummate pro, just a great, great fit with whatever team he played with, whatever complement of players he had around him. You know, he was never a superstar guy, but he was real steady, real heady, could be very effective, playing a very, very, you know, fundamentally sound game. And, of course, being coached by the great Lenny Wilkins, both in Cleveland and Atlanta, he had some of the best coaching available at the time. Hey, Peter, I know you're into the history of sports and all that. Tell us, without bringing too much pain upon the Cleveland fans, there were a couple other iconic sports memories, or not so kind memories, to the Cleveland faithful. One was the drive, right? If I can remember.
Right. That's right.
With John Elway? Was that the case?
Yeah, that was the 1986 NFL championship or AFC championship game, and Cleveland had a lead late, and John Elway drove down the field and tied it up, and then Denver won that game, went to the Super Bowl, yeah.
Okay, and then wasn't there something called the fumble?
The fumble, Ernest Miner. He's a guy you could hook up with. We were, again, the next year, the same game, same team, same game. And Miner was going in for what I think would have been a game-tying touchdown late, and he fumbled near the goal line. He has a book called Everybody Fumbles, and it's also about, you know, mental health and positive thinking and dealing, overcoming hardships. Because, you know, he had to deal with that painful memory of, you know, he fumbled the ball, and it was very hard on him. So anyway, yeah, that's the fumble with Ernest Miner.
Yeah, I remember the name, and oh, if you could help me reach out to him, that'd be great. And then the shot, of course, with Craig Elo, and I think that's about it, or was there another one?
Oh, they got a bunch of them. You know, that's the thing, there's tends to be an indulgence in negative thinking. I mean, you know, these things happen, and but people tend to, I don't know, it's they get carried away just focusing on it. You know, we have to move on and get on. Sometimes people don't get over stuff, but
no, we got a tremendous fan base. It's always great to see the Cleveland fans come out for all the different sports out that way. So, but anyway, I digressed a little bit there. You got another question for me from, or an excerpt from the book, or what do you want to do?
Cabby from San Francisco, watch out for my Golden State Warriors. The Cleveland Cavaliers had a great season, just too young right now.
Yeah, well, you know, this is where they really make their mark, or they don't. Look at the two teams who were the odds on end, Vegas odds on ends, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets. And the Lakers never made it. The Brooklyn just got swept out of there and just played terribly, even in some close games. But they just didn't seem to have that chemistry, that camaraderie, that sense of really playing together as a team. And they got swept out of there in four games. So this is where teams really make their mark. I've had that same experience playing on great teams that just never, ever quite got there with the Dallas Mavericks, the New York Knicks, the Utah Jazz. You know, we were right there chomping at it, but just couldn't quite bring it in.
Sherry from Foster, Rhode Island. Hey, fellas, love your insight. Listening to you, James, helps me a lot. I lost a friend to suicide this past week.
Wow. Yeah, it's so tragic, you know. And yet another young soccer player from University of Wisconsin-Madison just took her life a couple of days ago, 21 years old. I just don't know what's going on with our young generation of kids. And of course, it's the high-profile ones that we hear about. There are hundreds that happen every week that we never, ever hear about, 65,000 or so every year that we hardly ever hear about. I am really, really worried about our young generation of kids that are putting in such tremendous stress on themselves and pressures, especially being a competitive athlete, the perfection, the drive to be perfect, both on and off the court. And if they're not prepared for it, you see these couple of tragic examples, the young soccer player from University of Wisconsin-Madison, and the young soccer player a month ago from Stanford University. And it's just so tragic. It tears my heart every time I have to read these stories.
Yeah, it makes you think about, you know, how we value sports so highly and achievement. And, you know, these young people who are being – there's the money is big and the fame is big, and then they feel and they're just – maybe being pushed so hard, and, you know, they can't all make it, you know, to even professionally.
Yeah.
And so the stress of failure, there's going to be so much failure in spirit. I mean, it's the way it is, you know, and so
yeah.
These kids, if that's the be all and end all of life, you know, athletic glory, then it's these kids are paying the price by when they go, you know, but when they take it so hard because they think, I have to succeed. It's their, you know, like you talked about pleasing your parents, and they feel so devastated when they can't, because most of them can't be pro, and most pros can't win the championship. I mean, only one out of 30 teams can win a title every year.
That's right. Let me say, Peter, I think a lot of what we're seeing is the fallout from the last 2 years of the pandemic. This tremendous stress, this isolation, this loneliness, this depression and anxiety it caused so many of us. Sports is great because it's a great getaway. I mean, when you're out there on the practice field or on the court during the games, you are just in your own little element, your own little world. But then you have to come back to reality and back to the loneliness and depression and anxiety, if that's what you're having. It's waiting for you as soon as that game is over, as soon as that practice is over. And that's one of the things our young athletes just don't recognize. They don't realize. And they have to realize that it's okay to ask for help. And please let people know. Both these young soccer players, both of their families say that there were absolutely no signs that anything was wrong. This is the problem. So many of us keep it to ourselves and don't dare let anybody know that something's not quite right with us. And this is my job. This is my work. I continue to stress and encourage people. Let people know. People care about you. People love you. And they will definitely miss you. So please, please reach out for help.
Yeah, Sherry, she said also she wished, not the suicide of her friend, she wished she saw it coming. People hurt. Maybe that's the hint. Darlene from Shaker Heights, this show every 2 weeks shuts everything down to hear it. The leadership and care you fellas share is something. I know your producer takes flack on his voice. That's because Don Casey rubbed off on him, the Godfather tandem.
Yeah, you need to get Don Casey on your show, Peter. That's a funny. He's a good guy, you know. But thanks so much, Sherry. You know, next month, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, the whole month of May. And I'm really up in my game, up in my voice, my advocacy to continue. I blog every single day about mental health issues on my blog. I talk about it. I've got a couple of speaking engagements coming up with big audiences of speaking to folks, business people, students. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you're going to see it everywhere. I hope the media makes a big, big deal out of it and continues to encourage people so that we can finally destigmatize this kind of thing. It won't take it one time around, you know, one May or next May or the May after. It's a lifetime thing that we have to continue pursuing and pressing on.
Eric from Concord, Massachusetts. The problem today is no one listens or cares. That's why people are giving up. I honestly could not do that. God is such an inspiration to me, and this show is as well. Thank you for Tuesdays, Peter and James.
Yeah, thank you so much, Peter. Yes, hey, God was right there with me, even when I felt there was absolutely nobody else in the world who even cared about me, who even thought about me. I knew that God was there with me, and holding me and holding my hand, as I say, holding my hand, because if I tried to hold his hand, I surely would have let go at some point. He held my hand and held me up and guided me through this very, very difficult time. Me not knowing why I was going through this difficult time, but God knew. And when he brought me through it, he put me on a new platform, a new solid ground, of saying, James, now you have the experience, the real life experience of knowing what people go through. And you have to get out there and be that voice and that advocate for mental health awareness and suicide prevention. And that's the vow and that's the pledge and that's the commitment I've made the rest of my life to be just that.
Continuing with your book, Celebrating Your Gift of Life from the Verge of Suicide to a Life of Purpose and Joy, from Chapter 12, The third agreement, don't make assumptions, is another very difficult agreement to live up to. Our minds work in a way that we naturally make assumptions, and then as we get older, we feel we have enough life experience to just fill in the blanks without all the information, which is jumping to conclusions. It actually becomes easier to make assumptions than to ask or re-ask a question to get a specific answer. If you have difficulty communicating with someone in particular, it's easier just to assume that they might want to communicate to you. However, assumptions more often than not will lead you down the wrong path. You have to be careful with making assumptions, even though it's human nature to do so. If you want an answer to your question, ask the question directly. It's not that hard to do, but it is something you have to discipline yourself to do as often as you possibly can. The last agreement, always do your best, makes me think about childhood and the childhood innocence that comes with it. Children don't always understand the reasons parents tell them to do certain things, but for the most part, they wish to please their parents. If you tell them to get good grades in school, they will try their darndest to do so. If you tell them to be quiet and sit still in church, even though they are naturally wiggly, they will try their best to please you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these things are so, so true. And, you know, we just have to keep in mind that each day we're going to fall short of perfection every day. Everybody does. But if you can just strive to get to that point of being the very best you can be, given that all you have every single time out, you're going to be so much further down the road towards staying on track and being successful. It's like the old saying, if you shoot for the moon, well, you might miss it, but you'll hit a star instead, you know? And that's totally fine. I mean, hitting that star is so much further ahead of where you are now that you're going to continue propelling yourself forward. In my blog today I put out, and by the way, it's on WordPress, standingabovethecrowd.com on WordPress. There was a piece I put in there, 6 things to talk to your kids about with mental health. And one of the things was, notice what you notice, but don't judge, okay? People who are going through mental challenges, they have this tremendous fear they're being judged, they're being watched, they're being evaluated. But if you just notice what's going on, notice when something's not quite right, when something's gone awry, notice it and bring it up at the appropriate time. But try not to judge, especially with our children who are so... they're so vulnerable. They're so impressionable. They're so easily influenced, and they value our opinions and our thoughts as grown-ups in their lives. So if you see your children acting a little bit differently, notice it, take a note down, and talk to them at the appropriate time about it.
Continuing with your book, but as we get older, we learn to cut corners, to take shortcuts to get to our objectives. We learn to lie, cheat, and sometimes do whatever it takes, thinking we are being more efficient and perhaps smarter. But in reality, we're not doing our best to be the best we can be. And only we know within ourselves if we are giving our best effort. As an athlete, I know coaches demand an extremely high level of athletic performance. But you learn as you go through practice after practice how to take little shortcuts here and there, how not to totally exert yourself during a particular practice or a drill if you don't have to. But it's funny, especially in sports, how almost every athlete comes alive and becomes more energetic when they have a chance to score, especially if it will win the game. They can be dead tired on defense, but once the ball bounces to them, they're off to the races. That's a prime example of not always doing your best, but saving yourself for situations. Instead, you need to learn to always do your best all the time. Please keep these 4 agreements in mind. I know they're impossible to keep every moment of the day, but if you use them as your guiding principle, your life will be much more balanced, healthy, and enjoyable in the long run. Plus, if you don't live your life being the best you can be, it's hard to help anyone else becoming their best. There's a quote from, you quoted Martin Luther King Jr., "I cannot be the best I ought to be if you are not the best you think you ought to be, and you cannot be the best you ought to be if I am not the best that I ought to be."
That's so true. So true. And you know, getting back to cutting corners, I mean, this goes into the agreement of don't make assumptions. The reason so many of us make assumptions is because we already think that we can fill in the blank without really getting the factual information. You know, how many times are you in a conversation where you're just kind of halfway listening and just kind of filling in the words and filling in the blanks that you think the person is saying? And sooner or later, you'll find yourself way over here, and the person you're talking to is way over there, not even on the same page anymore. It's a lazy way of trying to relate and communicate with each other. And that's why one of the agreements is don't make assumptions. And also, we don't necessarily want to hear bad news, especially. And so we won't even ask the question. We'll just fill in the blank with a little bit more positive news that probably isn't quite the truth or quite the fact. So it's hard. I know it's hard. And like I said, we all of us fall short every day. But if we can just try to keep these four agreements in mind of just, you know, always doing your best. Don't make assumptions. Your word is integral and golden. And don't take anything personal. Hard to do, but if you can try to get halfway there, 70% way there, you are so much further along than you ever imagined.
Yeah, you talked about listening. I think that's one of the most important things if we're going to have improvement with the mental health problems, you know, because people, we all need to become better listeners. You know, we all, like you mentioned, being distracted, not really listening. And so there's this frustration people have, you know, we want to be heard, but who will listen? And, you know, the other day I was leaving my job, and the guy was coming in. I'm a caregiver, and he saw I was receptive, so he just poured out for about 20 minutes, and I could see, and I thought, all right, I wanted to go home, but I thought, you know, this guy, and I could see the relief he felt, and I thought, all right, this is good, you know, we should. Last night, there a guy in my apartment building. Yeah, same thing. And I thought, all right, look, we need to give people time. And like, it's so easy to be, you know, we're online, and then people are, and then we're not, and we somebody's talking, but you're looking at Facebook or whatever. And we really have to focus on each other, really listen. And because if you listen, it really helps people. You know, they feel this relief, and it feels, and so if this is something we really can do to help improve mental health, because so often people aren't listening, and there's this frustration everyone has because of that.
Yeah, the ability to connect and stay connected to each other is so valuable, but so sorely missing in today's society. I see people out to dinner, couples, and they are automatically on their phones sitting across from each other. And, you know, when I'm out to dinner, when I'm with somebody in a meaningful conversation, I leave my phone in the car. I don't need it buzzing. I don't need it ringing. It's in the car. It's got voicemail. It's got text messages. People can leave messages there. And I don't want to take away that valuable time that I want to give someone, whether it's out on a date or it's at a special occasion or sitting in church. All these places, you know, we have to be able to disengage from the social media stuff that's really taken over our lives. And I don't think a lot of us understand to what extent it has really almost made us addicted, and in a way addicted to looking at that screen every couple of minutes. Try to break away from it a little bit more each day, and you'll find yourself in a healthier, happier place.
Continuing with your book, Chapter 13, Where Do I Go From Here? By the end of 2019, I was feeling better, like I was back on top of things. I was busy with my nonprofit foundation, Your Gift of Life, and had begun writing this book. I was also doing quite a few speaking engagements, especially to my target audience of young students throughout the United States. When I speak, I make a point of telling the males in the group it's okay to have feelings, and that being able to talk about them shows strength to get them to open up and reach out for help if they need it. Life, however, hasn't been without its trials and tribulations. I hadn't forgotten how my mental health therapist friend Chuck Wright told me that suicide would always be an option for me. Some days I find myself in a funk where I think if just one more shoe drops, I will choose suicide. When I realize I'm in this place, I try to turn that thinking around quickly and break up my routine. I try to find the company of uplifting positive people whom I know really care about me. I try to change my activities and maybe go to a coffee shop where quite a few people are around and a lot of conversations are happening, or go to the gym, which is usually an uplifting place as well. But having that one more shoe drop would be difficult. Let me assess my life now as I'm writing this book so you understand how my mindset has changed from when I felt my life had purpose and I was super successful.
Yeah. You know, and I continue to follow those things. That was 2019 you're reading it from. This is 2022, 3 years later. And even today I was out at the coffee shop, being around positive, uplifting, buzzing environment, you know, and watching people, being with people. It just makes me feel good. I'm in the gym 3 or 4 days a week around the same kind of activities. Those are things you have to force yourself to do. It'd be so easy just to sit here with my cat and my dog and quietness of home. But, you know, you start falling into that little bit of a funk. And even though you have a companionship of maybe a pet or something or a kid or a spouse even, it's not the same as pushing yourself a little bit out of your comfort zone, out into a place where you can just really be able to thrive and feel alive and hear all the wonderful activities of life all around you. These are all the things I would have been missing. I would have missed if I would have taken my life. And, you know, I haven't thought those suicidal thoughts in 3 years. Coming out of my depression, yes, it was a distinct possibility. It was probably in my top 10 list of activities that I could possibly do to myself harmfully. But in a normal person, it's in your top 100. It's probably number 99, 90, 98, 99, 100. You don't even think about it. But when somebody's going through mental challenges, you have a short list of top 5, top 10 things that you are probably going to do to yourself if things continue to fall apart, if the other shoe continues to drop. So try to get as healthy as you possibly can. And people, please, we have to take care of each other. You have to take care of yourself first and each other, because there is such a shortage of mental health professionals to go around. If you try to sign up to go to a counselor nowadays, you're in a waiting line for 3 or 4 months. And 3 or 4 months is an awful long time when you are mentally distressed. So do these kind of things to take care of yourself so you can at least be in the healthiest place possible and then get the professional help you need.
Continuing with your book, my health is still iffy and probably always will be. I don't have a wife. I don't have any children. My mother passed away. I've never been close to my immediate family, and now we are more estranged than ever. A lot of my friends are no longer around. I'm sure they are busy with their lives. I don't have the brick-and-mortar business I had for almost 30 years. I've spent all my NBA savings, so I don't have a nest egg for retirement. My home is in foreclosure, and I am barely hanging on to it. I would end up losing it in July of 2020. But when I look around, I also see how truly blessed I am and realize I'm still a really good guy, of good character and a good friend to my friends. I still have a wonderful church home that I've been part of for nearly 40 years. Most people are still genuinely happy to see and be around me. I've helped countless people through the work I'm doing with mental health awareness and suicide prevention. I realize there is a tomorrow. I realize just how much of a gift life is.
Absolutely, yeah, and I do realize that now. Like you read off that list, I lost everything. The only thing I didn't lose was my life, and I almost took that from myself and from everybody else. But everything else, my house, my business, my wife, my stepson, and still now I'm here without a significant other in my life. And, you know, putting it all back together, but I've got faith that God will provide. And he will find a new suitable significant other partner for me and help me bring my life continually back to its fullness and richness that it used to be, all in his glory and all in his name. And so I'm a patient man. I'm a faithful man. And I know that God kept me here for a reason. And I know he's going to continue watching over me and you and everybody else out there listening tonight.
Our guest has been Mr. James Donaldson, former NBA player, author of the book Celebrating Your Gift of Life, From the Verge of Suicide to a Life of Purpose and Joy. We are out of time. Do you have any final words, Mr. James Donaldson?
No. Keep in mind that next month, May, is Mental Health Awareness Month. And please, if you need help, reach out for help. Find somebody who you think might need your help, your support, your love, and call them, talk to them, drop them a note, and check in on them. Do it for each other this coming month for sure, and we'll be able to continue this momentum that we're picking up of getting everybody on top of their game so they can be on top of their game for everybody else in their lives. So I just love everybody out there, and it's so great to be with you, Peter, every 2 weeks, that we can continue sharing the work that we're doing and be a positive influence in the lives of so many people out there. Thank you so much, Peter. It's just a joy to be with you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Donaldson. Mr. James Donaldson will be back in 2 weeks, May 10th. It's been wonderful, wonderful, wonderful having him on the show again tonight. Next week, we have Karen Azer on the show, who is the author of Mind of Gold, The Girlfriend's Guide to Financial Freedom. She's a big she's also a college fan, NFL, college football, New England Patriots fan. So that'll be nice. I'm going to be contacting Sam McDowell and hope to schedule him as well. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again, Mr. James Donaldson.
All right. Be blessed, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.